once you start creating, you just build momentum. It's crazy. Like, you just start putting something out into the world, even if one person sees it. Often, even if no people see it, just the act of creating builds momentum. And so out of that momentum, I ended up getting this National Geographic grant to do this documentary in Zambia on maternal and infant health. And I was like, all right, that's it. That's the thing to sink my teeth into. That's the thing I'm going to quit my job for. And that's what I'm going to travel across the world to go do. Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome back to the Austin Meyer Podcast. We're into 2019 and it feels so good. This is episode 11 and I am currently sitting with my good friend, Joe Alexander Short. We have a special episode for you today. This one was kind of, I was on a run recently and I was thinking about why I wanted to start a podcast, the value of it. And one of the cool things about having a podcast, I think, is that over the years, I'm going to be able to go back in time and listen to past episodes and see where I was at personally on my journey of trying to become a documentarian. And so I was thinking that since 2018 has now finished up, it would be a fun moment to kind of do a time capsule episode where I reflect on a year that was really influential for me. And so I just had this vision while I was on my run of being, you know, in my 60s and 70s and having kids of my own or grandkids, who knows, and pulling up an episode 11 to see where I was at on my journey and to kind of listen in. So instead of me just having a full monologue, I thought it'd be fun to invite my friend Joe over to my place here in Santa Rosa. Joe is a documentary filmmaker himself, and he and I are kind of in similar places in our journey, and we spend a lot of time talking about movies we like, things we liked about those movies, gear we're excited about, and different strategies for creating stories in a visual medium. And so I thought it'd be fun to have Joe come over here and we could kind of record one of those conversations with a little bit of focus on him interviewing me about my experience so that I could share that with you all and that maybe one day I can go back and listen to it and see where I was at. So without further ado, we're going to jump into a little 2018 year in review. Joe, thanks so much for coming over today.
Austin, thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right. So where should we begin?
So that's, I've been thinking about where to begin.
Yeah.
So I have a couple ideas here. So one, I'm curious like where you see your year starting. Mm-hmm. So similarly, like my family has a tradition where every Christmas Eve, we like put our stockings up and we say, I'm Joe, I'm 27, and kind of this is what I did this year. Here's a little synopsis. So, and I think we want to get into that, you know, like a detail.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could do like a little bit of an overview. I also want to talk about kind of where you are currently in your journey.
Yeah.
So that could be a jumping off point too of, you know, you're just back from Brooklyn and like that experience in New York. And I've been curious to see like what you learned out there professionally, personally.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just got back from 3 weeks in New York and this trip was a chance for me to try to learn about the documentary filmmaking industry. So for the past couple of years, I've been working completely independently and I really needed that time on my own because coming out of journalism, my journalism grad program at Stanford, I was pretty unconvinced that journalism was kind of the path that I wanted to go down. There was a lot about it that didn't resonate with me. And even when I went right after Stanford to the LA Times and I was doing kind of like these quick turn videos, there was a lot of it that I was just not satisfied by. I was getting a lot of good reps and practice, but wasn't really excited about the stories I was telling. And so over time, I just told a bunch of different stories on a bunch of different topics and eventually arrived at an understanding of myself that documentary films is where I want to develop my career. And now that I've identified that, now that I've had that time of self-discovery, I'm thinking it could be a much better opportunity to learn faster if I'm working with people who are better than me, who have more experience than me. But I just don't even know where to begin, because even like the journalism world that I was learning about in my grad program, like newspapers and all that business is much different than documentary film business. And so I went out there, took like any meeting I could, just cold emailed people, friends of friends, and just to try to get a sense of like, if I want to go this route, what should I do? And so coming back from that trip, I still am like very excited about the potential of like working my way up the ladder from within a more official production company. One thing that I learned out there is just like how much contract and freelance work is makes up the documentary film industry. You know, even like everything from like a production assistant to the director are oftentimes working on a freelance or contract basis per project. So I'm still excited about doing that. But because I have this documentary that I shot in Zambia on maternal health, and I have, you know, probably a couple months worth of like really focused post-production to like bring that to a final product, I don't feel like I want to just move to New York right now and just like see what happens, because I have work to do and I might as well do that work not paying rent from my parents' house. You know what I mean?
Were you considering doing that? Was that one idea that you would get there and be so inspired? Are there all these options that maybe you would move? And
So there was this one production company called Show of Force, and they are a production company that is working on the documentary right now about Nicholas Kristof, who I traveled with and reported with for the New York Times. When I got out to New York, I asked Nick if he would want to meet up, and he was finishing his book manuscript. So he's essentially blocking out the whole world as he finished his book. But he's like, I'll give you the introduction to this production company. So I was like, great. He wrote a very kind intro, and I went over to this production company called Show of Force, met with them. And that was the first spot. And this was probably 2 weeks into my 3 weeks there. That was the first place I entered, and the vibe of the place, the two people who I met with, I was like, I feel this, you know? And they're doing pretty much all documentary work, which seems pretty unique, because most companies I met with do commercial work as like a big part of their business model to make money. This one does like all documentary, not only feature docs, but also, you know, documentary series for HBO, stuff like Netflix, stuff like that. And so coming out of that meeting, I told them, if there's an opportunity, like, I'll move to wherever, like, I'm in. So I guess it's a potential that like 3 weeks from now I could be living in New York or somewhere, wherever a documentary is taking place. But so I'm going to continue following up with them, because I'm really excited about them, the work they're doing, and especially this one woman named Viva, who I met, who she essentially has the role that I'd want in the future, which is a freelance director. You can jump in whenever.
Yeah, I'm curious about that role, because I saw it on like your Instagram stories. You're right. Like, okay, that job, like, I want to do what you're doing.
Yeah.
What was it about that role? Was it the kind of stories that she was telling, or the way they were telling it?
Mm-hmm. So when we were in that meeting, I was sitting across from two of the people who work at Show of Force. One, which works at the company full time, you know, does storytelling work, but also a lot of business work as well for the company. And then the other was this woman named Viva, who works as a freelance director. So she was currently at Show of Force, but then maybe after that project, she'll go to another production company and direct something with them. And she was talking to me, giving me advice. And, you know, they were telling me things about like being careful about the work that I choose to go into. Like being careful about not taking too much commercial work, because then they might not want to hire me in documentary, because it's just like different kind of verticals that they see their jobs way differently, which makes sense to me. But anyway, just general advice. And then she said, another huge piece of advice I have for you is to just like pay close attention to what roles really excite you about making films? And then also like what you want your lifestyle to be? Because the lifestyle as an editor, I mean, we know, having done, being a one-man band for the past year, for all these years, we know each role is very different. I've never specialized, but I can imagine what that'd be like. So, you know, cinematographer in the field all the time, traveling all the time, like working on anywhere from 1 to 6 documentary projects at a time, and pretty much being hired for day shoots where they fly all over the place.
Which is what your mentor's doing. Right. So you've seen that.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're in the field, you shoot, and then you pass off that footage. Editor, you're in the editing room all the time. And she described her role as a director. She was like, you know, I love to be part of all parts of that process, which is coming up with the idea, which is being in the field and developing a relationship with the people that we're filming. But then I also like to be involved a little bit on the edit and kind of see that come to fruition, to see the story from the beginning to the end. And she said that in terms of like travel and lifestyle, that it usually goes in kind of chunks. Like she'll be in the field for, you know, a couple months straight, and then she'll be in the office for a couple months afterwards. And after she got done talking about what she does, I was like, well, I already know what I want to do. And it's like, it's what you do. And it was kind of felt, I'm not the best at being like super direct in those contexts, like clearly implying to someone that I want them to give me a job.
Give me your job.
Yeah. So I was like a little nervous to kind of be really forward about it. It's just not my personality. But I asked her how to get to where she is. And she recommended that I look for some production assistant work at a company like Show of Force. There were other people I met who said, I think you should shoot for a producer role, not producer or production assistant, based on your experience. Mm-hmm. I don't really care too much, honestly, about what the role is, that I'm just getting my foot in the door, because I know you're on one project, and then with these small teams, documentaries that are often very small teams, you're going to be tasked with doing all sorts of things.
Were they supportive of the doing the one man band kind of work? Because right now, like, you're learning about all the skills. Are they saying like, maybe you're far enough along now where it's time to specialize?
I heard multiple times from people who were just encouraging that I'm like taking the right steps. They're like, you're doing the right things. This meeting, which I'm referring to, which I felt was the best lead of my time in New York, I don't think they had seen my work samples that I had sent. So I don't really think that they knew what I was capable of, other than this very generous recommendation or referral that I had from Nick. So most people were encouraging that I was doing the one-man band thing. But when I was talking about, I want to get my foot in the door in this industry, mm-hmm. they would then say like, well, what do you want to do specialty wise? Makes sense.
Right. Yeah. And was it the kind of stories in particular that they were telling at that place that it was like all documentaries? Did they have a specialty? Was it like social justice type docs in that organization?
Yeah. To be honest, I haven't done enough research on it to know. I just know their work, that they did the documentary Half the Sky, which was based on Nicholas Kristof's book. They probably did that, I have no idea, like 5 or 6 years ago. So that's one piece that I know they've done that resonated with me. I don't really know their whole collection. Yeah.
So it seems like the advantage of that, of jumping into that role, is like that group, if you call them production company, mm-hmm. is like they're going to find the story ideas, and they're going to have the connections, and then have a team to be able to bring that together. Because I know like a lot of documentaries we watched this year are kind of like maybe start off as one-man bands.
Yeah.
And then they bring in people, right? And it's kind of like organic on her shoulders, or Minding the Gap, or Hill County.
Yeah. Well, so this was another interesting thing that I thought a lot about. So for those listening, one of the documentaries that is up for an Oscar this year is called Minding the Gap, and highly recommend you check it out. It's on Hulu right now. And Joe, you probably know a little bit more about the full making of it, but maybe you can explain a little bit of what it's about.
What it's about? So it is about this town in the Rust Belt. And the story follows two 19, 20-year-old skaters. And the filmmaker goes in and over a period of 6 years follows these two guys growing up and kind of tracks their family life and some of like the trauma in their past and how their community of skateboarders has really become a family and helped them grow and make sense of their past. And as they've kind of started to have kids of their own or move out of this place. So it's like a real time, like coming of age story. It makes you like wish you were a skater and
yeah,
and a filmmaker like that. Like it's just so personal, and cinematically, it's really interesting.
So I had a phone conversation while I was in New York, with the producer of that film, and so that film is made by a production company called Kartemquin, which is out of Chicago, and apparently, so this will come back to kind of my own personal journey in a second, but. The filmmaker's name, or the director of this film, is named Bing Liu, and he had been working on this film, like Joe said, for 6 years or something. It was kind of his passion project. Like, he was making his money day-to-day working as a director of photography or a cinematographer. He was on camera. That's what he did. And then on the side, he was doing this passion project, which was following a couple friends and kind of telling this culture that the story of this culture that he was embedded in. And through a number of opportunities, you know, got his project seen really early stages, like scrappy, you know, drafts. It got seen by the right people who thought, hey, there might be something here. Let us help you develop it. So he got some mentorship through that, which was from what I heard, very helpful. And then, you know, over time, years, this film came together into this beautiful piece of documentary and art and is now winning all these awards. So what I took from thinking about Bing and his journey is that he was doing probably like the grunt work. He was on the grind, you know, probably shooting footage for projects that he wasn't super excited about day in, day out, but he never lost sight of, this end goal, which is creating these amazing stories, really personal stories. Again, I'm projecting onto him, but
I think that's right. I've seen some interviews.
Yeah, okay.
Where he talks about that.
Right. Yeah. And so, when this thing came out, he was able to jump like all the rungs on the ladder that normal people who are aspiring to be a director want to get to. So he might have been like low man or as a DP, he makes a passion project, which really pops. And then boom, now he's a director. Now he's winning awards. Now he's going to be able to direct whatever he wants. So the lesson I take from that is to not worry so much if the job I'm taking is a lot of grunt work, to focus just on like what I can learn day in, day out. And then always on the side, at nights, on the weekends, be working on my passion projects, because all it takes is like one of those to pop and you're going to be directing and you jump all the rungs on the ladder. Not that there's a straight ladder in this industry or a lot of industries now, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, totally. He talked in this interview about working, he was in Chicago working with like really good DPs and like he would just get little tips. He's like, it was amazing what you can learn by working with someone who's been in the industry and been a DP for that long. And then it's part of why, like, cinematically, that documentary is so interesting.
Yeah.
And I know, like, you've always been really good at that, of like, okay, here is, like, my goal. Here are the little steps I need to take. Here's what I need to do in the moment. I know, like, when I saw you last October, we were here for the fires. Yeah. And I hadn't seen you, like, for a while before that.
Right.
And I was asking you, like, you know, what are you doing? you said your job and...
Oh, yeah. I was at a tech job. Company called SAP. I don't even want to go into it. Right?
Yeah. You were like, you know, I don't want to blow your cover here, but you're like, I'm kind of trying to work as little as possible.
Oh, yeah. So that I was trying to work as little as possible. That's
like,
no
it's
secret.
Amazing how little you can do. So you can like free up time to like do these stories. And exactly. At that point, you were cranking out like a video a week. Mm-hmm. And I was, without having talked to you too much about it, was just like, wow, you're putting in a lot of time, a lot of work. And mm-hmm. I know how much goes into that.
Much to the chagrin of my employer.
Your employer? Yeah. You kind of had this other idea of what you want to do.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, and so I saw kind of like that athlete background in you too, mm-hmm. you know, I think of like, okay, here are the steps I need to take to get to my goal, how to get, you know, 2% better.
Yeah.
And kind of do things day in and day out. So I wonder if you can talk about that time, because that's like it's a big leap to like leave a job, you know. I think probably a lot of people are in that position, mm-hmm. you know, where they're in maybe a more comfortable job.
Yeah.
But they really want to do something creative. Mm-hmm. And that time period seemed really important mm-hmm. for you to make. Okay, you were applying to jobs creatively and it wasn't working out. And you're like, I'm just going to take this into my own hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. Yeah. So I was working at SAP in Palo Alto and I ended up being there for 2 years, which is wild to even think about because I feel like I knew 3 weeks into the job that I should not be there and this was not where I was meant to be. And I, you know, I knew I wanted to get back into journalism. At that time, I didn't know whether that was going to be video journalism. I liked print reporting. I liked doing audio. I had no idea. So I would kind of just do little side projects. And I actually took like 2 months unpaid leave at one point and go do these journalism projects to continue what I was mentioning, that like time of discovery, figuring out what it is that I want to end up doing. And I thought, you know, while I do this discovery, if I can get paid by a Silicon Valley tech company and kind of save money for the eventual leap I have a feeling I'm going to be taking, great. So there was doing a lot of self-discovery at that time. And when I came back from 2 months unpaid leave, I was in Southeast Asia doing this project on the social and environmental impacts of hydroelectric dams. I was like, okay, I'm ready to leave. But again, like I wanted something that I was leaving for. I don't know whether that's like the right impulse or not, but I wanted some opportunity or something that I could like sink my teeth into that was like, I'm leaving for this. So I started applying to all these different jobs. And I just wasn't getting anything. and so I always like to feel, I always like to feel like internally, like I'm in control. And to feel like I was just putting out these applications and would either just not hear back or just get like the generic, like automated message that said I did not get a job made me feel really shitty. And I was like, I don't like these abstract companies out there to have full control over my life. Like, that's bullshit. Like, that's not, I don't want that. And I realized that I was like constructing in my mind that control that they had over me. So I was like, I need to flip that around. And it comes back, like you mentioned, to my background as an athlete. Like that's how we're trained. You know, if something's not going right, like you have the power to fix it. Like my coach at Stanford, Coach Jeremy Gunn, who is an absolutely incredible coach. You know, when I was kind of down as a soccer player and not getting a lot of playing time at Stanford, all that kind of stuff, he would always make this metaphor of the window in the mirror. And he said, when things are going really well, people have the tendency to look into the mirror and like look at themselves and kind of praise themselves. And he said, when things are going bad, players will look out the window and point to other people. And he said, what you need to do is flip that around. And when you feel like things aren't going well, to look into the mirror. What can you do yourself to change things around? And so that's the mentality that I went into this period of ultra creation, which was like, I'm going to look into the mirror. What can I do to get better and create opportunity for myself? And that's when I started this YouTube channel where I was making videos every single week, trying to make a story every single week. And in that time, found this love for video storytelling and started to find a little bit of my voice. And once you start creating, you just build momentum. It's crazy. Like, I'm sure you've been in that mode too. Like, you just start putting something out into the world, even if one person sees it. Often, even if no people see it, just the act of creating builds momentum. And so out of that momentum, I ended up getting this National Geographic grant to do this documentary in Zambia on maternal and infant health. And I was like, all right, that's it. That's the thing to sink my teeth into. That's the thing I'm going to quit my job for. And that's when I'm going to travel across the world to go do.
Yeah. I mean, how you phrase it, I was like, you ended up getting that. I know, like, you're strategic in terms of like what else might be out there. And so, yeah, it seems like an interesting dynamic for you of like you're creating, but also you're like, okay, what else do I need to do? Like that left brain side of how do I create? I don't know if you would call it structure for yourself or is it a goal?
And at that same time, this is kind of like where this podcast even started. Like the early days of like me even thinking about, oh, should I have a podcast? Should I be putting out photos every single day on social media? Was I was traveling in Lebanon and I was listening to this podcast in the car by Gary Vaynerchuk, which for the listeners, you can find his podcast at the Gary V Audio Experience. And he's big on social media and using social media to like make your dreams come true, to start the business you've always started, to bring more awareness to a cause that you're trying to promote, to not just think about social media as this thing where you're taking selfies and being like creating this fake image of you and your life for others, to see it more as an opportunity to make those career aspirations come true. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting reframe. I wonder if, I was like, oh my God, you're so right. Like, I have friends from Stanford who are YouTubers who their videos in 3 hours get as many views as like a lot of TV shows. I'm like, why am I waiting around? Same idea. Why am I waiting around for people to give me an opportunity when I can use social media to start putting out stories? So that's when, you know, the YouTube channel came. I was like, oh, maybe I can do a podcast and start getting an audience that way. So all those were happening around the same time. And then in the past year, it's kind of been starting the car on all of these things, you know, just getting it into gear, getting things going. And it's a long-term vision. It's a long-term vision for the podcast, for the documentary films. And I'm thinking on that long-term trajectory right now, which, yeah, is a challenge for me, but I think it's going to pay off.
And long-term in terms of like the skills that you're building, I like the like momentum as an idea. You're building momentum. Yeah. I've even seen it like with the podcast and tuning in, like they've started, you feel the momentum or you feel like some of the naturalness that you bring into that now that you have even more skills.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the question was long-term.
Yeah, long-term. Can you just talk more about that? Long-term, yeah. Is that
either... So long-term goals... Oh, man, this is going to be so funny to, like, listen to. like decades from now. So if you're listening, Austin, in the future, hello. Yeah, long-term goals, like, I would want to be someone who is directing documentaries that are up for Oscars, winning Oscars. I want to win an Oscar with a documentary. And so everything that I'm doing right now is in pursuit of that goal. And the Oscar, that's just like a symbol, which to me represents mastery of a craft, which is where I want to get. Like, if I don't win an Oscar, like, okay. Like, I want the pursuit, the journey of trying to win an Oscar, which means you have to be the best of the best when it comes to telling stories through video. That's what I want. That's what I'm after. And so everything from the podcast to the social media that I'm doing. That's building this ecosystem around the documentary filmmaking to allow me the most freedom to do those films. So if I can, you know, in the new year, I'm actually going to start a Patreon page. I guess that's a good plug now, huh, listeners? I'll plug it at the end too. But essentially, you know, I'm trying to build up, you know, with the podcast, if I'm talking to storytellers week in, week out, and I'm developing as a storyteller, you know, maybe one day people will say, hey, we need a speaker at South by Southwest or this conference. Who can we call on who knows about story? Oh, I know Austin knows about story. He directs his own documentaries and has this podcast where he talks to people. Make a little income that way. Maybe there's a Patreon supporters who really enjoy the content I put out, and they want to help support me in continuation of that work. Same with all the social media things. And what I'm thinking is, there are not a lot of people. This is one of the things I learned in New York. There's not a lot of people who just do documentary films. There's not a lot of people who just do what they want to do, just do their passion projects. All this right now is me trying to build the infrastructure that will allow me to just do what I'm passionate about every single day.
Through Patreon, through these maybe unconventional but available,
yes,
structures.
I'm always looking into different types of business models. I just never like to take a path that everyone takes. I hate doing that. So even
because it's less you?
It's just like, less me. It's just like not my personality. I like to go off the path. And so I'm always looking for that opportunity. And like, I'm inspired by people like this YouTuber who I follow, The Ginger Runner, who makes ultra running videos on YouTube. And he has a Patreon page, which through that makes he and his wife make a full-time living. Wow. Just making ultra running videos for YouTube. Like,
found their audience.
They found their audience. They do great work. Like, super niche audience. And he can make a full-time living doing just what he's passionate about. Like, that is inspiring to me. Like, that's more inspiring to me than someone who, you know, does an amazing documentary but spends, you know, 75% of their life doing commercial projects that they don't care about. Mm-hmm. That's more inspiring to me. And so the fact that we have the opportunity to use social media and things like Patreon to start to garner support for us pursuing our passion, like, I'm like, let me go for it. Let me try to create a path.
Yeah. And are there moments this year where you've been like, all right, I'm doing this. Like, was it a project you worked on? Like, was it Max Cowan?
Yeah,
Max. Like, what do I sound like when I'm the only person in the room? Or like, what?
That was a reference to like episode 3 of the podcast.
Episode 3, yeah, I love
something
that
like
one.
That. Yeah,
that's good. So
check it out, folks.
Yeah, I recommend it. yeah, and what did he else say? He said, you know, the finding your voice. He's like, what am I making that no one else can make?
Yeah.
Kind of, where's the intersection of that? What did you work on in this last year? What were the moments where you're like, all right, this is what I want to be doing?
Ooh, I think I don't know that I don't feel like I've found my own voice as a documentary storyteller yet. I'm on my way, but like Max said, I love what he said in that episode, which is like, I don't think you really ever like find it. And you've settled on it. Like, it's a continual process, lifelong process of finding your voice as a storyteller. There have been times with some of the projects that I've worked on this year, which I felt really resonated, like, to my core. Like, this is what I'm meant to do. And right now on my computer, my desktop screensaver is this photo I took of this girl named Layla in the Syrian refugee camp in Jordan. And she was one of the young girls who I followed in this little short documentary about soccer programs in the refugee camps out there. And I like keep that on my desktop screen, because every time I open my computer, Like, it's a reminder of working on that story and being there and interviewing her and like watching her play soccer. And it was like the confluence of like everything I've been working towards. And it's a reminder that like those types of stories are what I'm really passionate about, which are stories that have some relation to humanitarian issues. I'm not sure if like that's where I want my content specialty to be. If I need that, that's something that I'm still thinking about. But like working on that project in Jordan or working on my film that I did for The Atlantic, The Carpenter with the amputee, like I feel like I'm starting to finally get to that place where what I'm making is living up to my taste and what I'm making makes me proud and makes me feel like I'm on the right track. Because I can look at what I'm making now versus the YouTube videos I made a year ago when I was in that sprint and feel like, holy shit, I can come from there to here in a year. Like, wow. Like, right. Let me just, hopefully I just stay on that curve, you know?
Right. Yeah, you were saying like The Carpenter is like that one where you felt, and it's like very technically clean. Mm-hmm. Something like, you know, you don't really, nothing really takes you out of the story. Mm-hmm. And you told me that that was one of your goals going in to that experience. It was like, I want to get really fluent with the camera.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you achieved that, or what has been some of that growth?
Yeah, I feel like I'm really not that fluent with the camera still. Like, I don't know how other people do it. Like, I'd be curious to hear from you as well. But like, I still feel like it takes me so much shooting to get like a decent shot. And I guess for a project like The Carpenter, I just shot so much footage that I was able to find some good shots. Like, you know, there are a lot of things where, for the listeners, I'm about to get a little specific here when it comes to the cameras, but there are a lot of things that I'm just like not comfortable doing yet with the camera, which I think I need to develop, which is like shooting in a flat picture profile so that I have the most dynamic like color range in the final film. You know, I'm still relying on like automatic settings within the camera instead of setting things manually because I don't trust myself and my eye yet. I'm still not manually setting color temperature, like super specific things, which I know at the highest level of the game, like the cinematographers are doing. But I still haven't. And this is a good reminder to me that I need to continue doing those like side projects that give me a lot of reps. Cause right now I'm in the mode of like, I want to make just brilliant work, just like perfection. Right. But I think I can never get out of the mode of making those side projects that are just fun and quick on the side as ways of practicing skills. Because right now, if I go into like a paying project or a documentary project where I really want to execute, I'm not going to be brave enough or to take those risks with like setting manual color temperature or like shooting in a flat picture profile, all that kind of stuff. Because I'm like, oh, if I mess up, there goes that chance.
Right. Which kind of comes back to like wanting to work with more people, right? It's kind of like training on your own for soccer. You need to do that. You need to get your own reps, but also having a coach there to say, do this.
Right.
Technically.
Right.
Can move your head leaps and bounds.
Oh, right? Totally. Like when I went in 2015, when I went on that trip with Nick Kristoff, that reporting trip, I learned more in 2.5 weeks with him than I learned the entire year at my Stanford journalism grad program. Hands down. Not a question in my mind. And having that experience of having a mentor who I can directly look to as a way to learn, like, I love that. And so I want that again.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, I think, people in a lot of fields, especially artistically, find that it's kind of a lack of mentorship maybe, or of structure.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to go about creating that on your own.
Yeah.
So going back to, you used to talk about like inspiration or kind of projects you've done where you felt like, okay, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
I know like we've seen a lot more documentaries this year.
Yeah.
I know I have, and I know you have too. So what have you seen that's been particularly inspiring?
Yeah.
And is there, you know, the Oscar shortlist came out.
Yep.
These other award programs just came out. Do you have a list of your favorite documentaries and why?
Yeah. So the caveat here for the audience being I have not seen all the films on the short list. I hope to by the time the award show goes off. Okay, so if I had to say my favorite ones, if I had to give the Oscar right now, I think I would give it to Free Solo. I think if I had to list in order the top documentaries, I would go. This would be my top three. I think I would go Free Solo, Minding the Gap, On Her Shoulders. Now, On Her Shoulders was probably the one that impacted me the most because it's related to humanitarian issue, which I talked about, really is something that I'm passionate about telling stories around. And I watched it at a time when I'm doing a documentary, which is primarily shot in a different language. There were like a lot of things technically that I was watching. And I'm like, oh my God.
And for the listeners, On Her Shoulders is about Nadia Murad, who just won the Nobel Peace Prize. And I think most of it is shot in Canada. Mm-hmm. But yeah, shot in another language and very subtly powerful.
Yeah.
In some ways about like the way the media takes advantage of these really traumatic events in people's lives, and you kind of force them to be a spokesperson. And she's kind of much more like nuanced, media depiction of.
I think that one, like the story for On Her Shoulders is so simple. Like it's just about this woman with a really powerful and tragic story, and about how she's bringing that to the world. But essentially, like the narrative of that film is based around like her giving speeches at like the UN, like that. Those are like the major plot points, like a speech. And so much of the power of the film does not happen at those major plot points. They happen in between in these little subtle moments where you can tell like the Nadia Murad, the main subject, she doesn't even realize she's really being filmed. It's just like a facial expression she kind of makes or a little side comment she makes. And that really resonated with me because the story I'm telling and working on right now from Zambia on maternal health, like not much happens for most of like what I'm filming. It's like women who are pregnant and they're living their lives and, you know, they cook, they clean, they spend time with their children. Mm-hmm. But it's not like Free Solo where it's like this unbelievable event that like I'm climbing a 3,000 foot vertical granite rock. So I think watching that film, it resonated with me and what I'm going through currently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that there's gravity in any moment. And there's beauty in any moment.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then I think the reason why I want to say Free Solo at the top, I just think like that... I just think like the cinematography, I've seen it twice and it's just mind blowing. And I think I mentioned this to you right before we started recording, which is that there's a documentary out right now, which is getting a lot of accolades called Hale County. And there's a longer title, but it's essentially Hale County. And it's very artsy, very experimental. And it's won some big documentary awards. I personally would not want to see that win for best documentary because there are probably a lot of people out there who their only documentary they're going to see in a year is the one that wins the Academy Award. And I think that, unfortunately, that movie would probably turn a lot of people off to the form at large. This is just my personal opinion. I turned it off after 45 minutes. I was just not into it. Whereas Free Solo, I don't know anyone who's seen that and been like, meh. You know, it's just like, that'll captivate an audience no matter what, I think. a general audience. And for the benefit of the forum as a whole, I think it'd be awesome to see that.
That might be interesting, like for you, I don't know, to dig into a little bit in terms of like, what was it about Free Solo? And you mentioned like the soccer player, like that was part of like, it was a humanitarian issue, but like she was playing soccer.
Yeah.
And I know like that film, there's something like very visceral about it. Like you shared that Jimmy Chin podcast and like that term, like visceral.
Yeah.
Keeps like resonating with me, that like concentrated energy. Like Mac talks about that.
It's like, super, he likes hip hop beats.
It's like visceral. And I know like Hill County is experimental. Underneath all that, I stuck with it and watched it a couple times after talking to you. I was like, I'm gonna dig into this. And I struggled with it the first part of it. And then you see like what he is reacting to is depictions of African-American people throughout history and how racism is constructed through images. Mm-hmm. And he is showing different images and kind of challenging this notion. And it's gone about in like a very experimental way and takes a lot of intentionality to get to it.
Yeah.
But it's really not as maybe viscerally captivating as a Free Solo, something that's like so dramatic and so... Yeah. No, so I just wonder if, like, I see that in you. I think, like, the music, the way music has inspired your filmmaking, and me too, like, making music videos when we were, like, in high school.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of my trajectory, too, and it so taps into, like, emotion, and it's very much, like, temporal in a way that Hale County wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you're saying is right. I think I really enjoy stories that have some athletic element attached to it, or something where, you know, sports is this backdrop for something that's much bigger. At least that's the way I approach this film that I shot in Jordan. Soccer is the backdrop for really telling the story of these two children and what their life has been like as Syrian refugees. For Free Solo, his climb is definitely not the backdrop. Like, that is definitely the foreground. Mm-hmm. But as the filmmakers say in their interviews, it's like they wanted to make a film about Alex Honnold even before they knew he was climbing El Cap. And that's because they see him as this incredible example of living intentionally and pursuing mastery of a craft. I've even used that exact phrase in this episode. Mm-hmm. And so I loved just being with that for an hour and a half. And I know it's like probably a reflection of where I'm at and my background as an athlete, my upbringing. That really resonated with me. And then to bring into that film a love story, love me a good love story. And then also these elements of the filmmakers and the ethical decision that they had to make to end up shooting this documentary. Mm. I think there's layers to it that make it much more than just a climbing movie. And I really and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about like other areas of growth this year? If you're going to be looking back on this, you know, in your 60s or 70s, you know, the filmmaking aspect of it is important. Do you want to talk about anything else you experienced this year?
Mm. Let's see. Well, because we've been talking about my identity as an athlete, I think that's been an interesting point of growth this year, because really, this was the first year that I felt like I prioritized something else over being an athlete, which is crazy to say. But even after I finished my Stanford soccer career, I went into that job at SAP that I hated. And in that time, I discovered a love for ultra running, trail running, mountain running. And, you know, I would try to leave work as quickly as I could to head out into the mountains and run trails. And that time was actually great for me because I got to find my identity as an athlete in ultra running. And that was like what I cared about a lot. And like I prioritized trail running over my job 100%. And so this year, you know, quit my job, started pursuing this passion. And when I was out in Zambia, I had to tell myself, like, Austin, it is okay to not be in like training mode. It is okay to not have a race you're looking towards, to be developing at an elite level as an athlete. That felt like a challenge for me. It was a challenge for me. Like I always felt like when I was in Zambia, finish a long day of shooting to not like get out and go for miles and miles of running. Mentally, I had to like come to terms with that and be assuring of myself, like, that's okay. I'm not here for that. I want to dedicate every ounce of my energy to telling this story the best of my ability. Because right now, my long-term goals are around being a documentary filmmaker. They're not about being the best athlete in the world. So this year has been a unique one in finally prioritizing something over athletics. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to continue to be figuring out that the right balance between those.
And so do you kind of see the athletics this last year as maybe a backdrop to your filmmaking, or is there something about it that fuels that for you or kind of gets you in the right headspace?
I think it's, I mean, running for me is incredibly meditative. It takes me to beautiful landscapes and into nature. And I often listen to podcasts when I run and I get inspiration that way. And when I don't listen to podcasts, I run with nothing and a lot of ideas come to me. So it is a time when I find a lot of fuel for all these kind of projects I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But I think it may have come out in this conversation, but my identity and background as an athlete is really foundational to the work ethic I have as a storyteller. And I think if I were to stop being an athlete and stop taking that seriously, I'd still take it very seriously. If I were to stop that, I would fear that my work ethic in everything would suffer. So that ain't happening.
I like it. All right. So a little bit of time left.
Yeah.
We're heading into the new year.
Yes.
New Year's resolutions or anti-resolutions? You know, things.
What's
you
wanna, an anti-resolution?
Things you want to keep doing. Things you want to stay the same.
Yeah. Anti-resolution is things you want to stay the same.
Things you want to stay the same. Resolution would be something you want to change.
Okay.
New habit.
Okay. Good question. One New Year's resolution that I have. I'm not massive on New Year's resolutions. One I have is For Christmas every year, I write each member of my family a pretty lengthy letter expressing gratitude. And it feels really special to give them that letter. And I also, on the lines of gratitude, have a daily practice starting off my mornings. I like to start every morning with some sort of movement, some sort of exercise. And before I do that exercise or while I'm doing the exercise, I take some time mentally to reflect on things I'm grateful for. What I want to do, one of my New Year's resolutions is to combine those two, which is the letter writing and the gratitude, and to start doing that as a more consistent practice throughout the year. So I haven't figured out the exact number, but what I want to do is be handwriting physical letters throughout the year, maybe, you know, 3 a month or something, or like 1 a week or something like that, to different people in my life who I'm grateful for their impact that they've had on me. Because like expressing gratitude makes me a better person. And I think it brings light into other people's lives. So that's one of the resolutions I have. other tangible resolutions is to finish the maternal health documentary. And those are the things that are coming to mind right now.
That's great. Love that.
Yeah.
Great. What about things you want to stay the same?
Things I want to stay the same. Let's think. Okay. Well, while I was thinking, your question of what I want to stay the same actually makes me think of another thing. I'm not sure where it fits on the change or stay the same. But one thing, like I talked about, always wanting to do passion projects, always have things going. And because I have a tendency to get so like tunnel vision focused on things, when I'm doing the editing of this maternal health documentary, when I'm working on my podcast, I don't want to forget that part of my mind that is searching for news stories. I've kind of felt it in the last couple months. Like I'm not on the lookout for stories in the way that I have been in the past. And that's why I need to like keep doing those little portraits and interviews on the streets. That's why I need to keep doing little side project experiments to see if what might develop into a longer term story. I just don't want to lose that.
And it is a long-term goal connected to that of like finding that that like passion project that could turn into your thing.
Right.
Is that part of?
Yeah. It's actually like, I've actually started thinking like, who is one of my like close friends who I could like follow over time in the same way that they did for Minding the Gap, Bing Liu? Like who's my friend who I just like have full access to, who's either going to do something like Alex Honnold amazing and climb this huge mountain, or who's going to just have this really interesting, you know, internal story play out. Exactly what you're saying. Like, what can I be working on that might be that story that pops that allows me to bypass levels of that ladder?
Yeah. It'd be interesting to look at like Bing Liu's process for that. Like, where did that idea come from?
Yeah, it would be. I'll have to invite him on the pod.
Yeah.
Should we do one final question here?
Yeah. I'm not sure if this necessarily fits right at the end.
Okay.
But you had mentioned like, you're be bold. Okay. I have one question about like your morning routine. Kind of, okay. Or that idea, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I've asked you about this in the past. Like,
yeah.
You're a very healthy person. Thank and you're you. Doing this on your own, kind of without a lot of formal structure. People have asked me that a lot in the last couple of weeks, like, how do you edit, how do you do this stuff without a boss or necessarily or going into a workplace? What are some of the practices that you developed this year that I think people could benefit from hearing about?
Well,
how do you approach it
big picture? A lot of my energy and enthusiasm to do this on my own without anyone telling me to is because everything I'm doing feels like play. And a big part of that is because I'm coming from a job which I hated. And so the YouTube channel and all the storytelling that I would do outside of work was my playtime. And now I do that all the time. So it just feels like play to me. So it doesn't feel like a job. It doesn't feel like work. That might be a little bit cliche, but it's the truth. I just love doing it. And so that gives me so much energy to do it day in, day out. The other one is because I have very ambitious goals and because I know this is a challenging industry, documentary filmmaking, it's not a particularly lucrative industry. I know that if I want to reach the top of that game, like I have to be really, really damn good. And the only way you're going to get really, really damn good is by working really, really damn hard. And so having those long-term goals pulls me, like, or pushes me in the right direction. And I am always thinking of like, here are my long-term goals. I want to keep that in the back of my mind, but it's the journey to get there, which is the exciting part. It's like the day-to-day work of like doing this podcast on the day after Christmas. Like, I love doing that. That's like, it's like the work, the guy who I mentioned, Gary Vee, he says it's like the clouds and the dirt. The clouds is like the long-term vision and the dirt is like the day-to-day work. So if you can find a love for the dirt, then I trust that I'll get to the clouds one day. And then in terms of like tactical morning routines and like tactical routines, like everyone's different in terms of like what's going to fuel them, what's going to get them energized. I'm super big in the last 6 months and like the whole, like be your best self kind of like, personal, like coaching, like all that kind of whole world I've gotten really into, which is it's not everyone's vibe, but like I'm really into that. And so, you know, I've taken some like audio courses, like Tony Robbins courses and stuff like that, and kind of taken bits that resonate with me and left others behind, and kind of had, yeah, trying to develop some morning routines and stuff like that around moving my body, letting emotion kind of come out of that movement, doing these gratitude practices, doing some sort of kind of self-talk, positive self-talk. Like me just sitting here saying like, I'm going to win an Oscar one day, or like, I'm going to get to the top. Like that's a very bold thing to say. Not a lot of people would say that. Not a lot of people would say the things that I do on social media, but like I have nothing to hide. And I feel like if I speak this, I can kind of will this kind of stuff into existence. And as I speak that and put it out into the world, it's also putting some pressure on me, which I like. Like I can be transparent about my goals, because that's another thing that will get me to work hard. It's like, if I'm telling you to your face right here that like, I want to be the at the top of the game, like I gotta live up to that. I gotta walk the walk, right? And so every time I say that, I'm like building that momentum, building that energy to actually make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. I like it.
All right, so maybe last question.
Okay, last question.
All right, so
Happy New Year, folks.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Yeah. All right, last one.
All right, so 70-year-old Austin, you're listening to this right now.
If you're listening.
Mm-hmm. I would like the younger Austin to give you a little message.
Okay. Any direction on
any
that message?
Any direction. You know, like when you're in high school, like freshman year, you write a letter to your senior yourself?
Yes.
And then if you feel moved, you could embody the older Austin and give your younger self some advice or encouragement.
Okay. The older Austin would tell the younger Austin, Austin, keep going, man. You're on the right track. Oh, my voice got low there, huh?
Yeah, you're going to...
Trust the process, young Austin. Trust the process. Keep creating. Don't worry about perfection. Accept mistakes as gifts. And my message to old Austin is that, like I did this year, which was quitting my job, moving out of California for the first time to go live in Zambia, setting out completely like on my own, jumping into that discomfort, my message to 70-year-old Austin is that I hope you're still doing that. I hope you're still jumping in to the unknown, doing things that make you uncomfortable, because that's where growth happens. And I hope you at 70 are still setting your sights on new stories, on new ridiculous mountain races, and that you're still growing, because you got a lot of work to still do. You ain't done yet, 70-year-old Austin.
You want to run the mountains?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking it into existence, that's what I'm telling you. All right, Joe.
Austin.
I think that's a great place to end. Thank you so much for coming by, man.
Absolutely.
And doing this interview. I think it's gonna be really fun to look back on, and I hope the audience who has kind of been following my journey a little bit throughout the year got a little bit more depth into what I've been going through and what I've been thinking about. So thank you for a lovely interview and kind of getting that out of me. It's really helpful to have someone to to speak this out with, and especially as someone as talented as you are as a filmmaker.
Thanks, Austin. Yeah. Appreciate this conversation, all of our conversations kind of sharing this journey. So
yeah, man.
Yeah. In the new year.
Yeah.
More of the same.
And I guess that with that, we're going to sign off here. I want to thank Joe once again for being here for the interview. I want to thank you for your attention, for listening. Please reach out to me on social media at Austin Meyer Films, on Instagram and Facebook at A Meyer Films, on Twitter, and let me know what you're excited about in the new year, 2019. What are some of your goals? Speak that into existence. Be bold. What kind of stories do you want to tell? What do you want to learn? What kind of pursuits are you going after? Send that to me. And also, let me know what you're thinking of the podcast. What kind of guests do you want to hear? Do you want to hear more filmmakers like Joe and myself? Do you want to hear from writers, photographers? Anything you can think of. I'm looking for feedback, and appreciate any message I get. Happy New Year. Happy holidays. Hope you're spending time with family and friends. You all are the best. And I will be announcing that new Patreon page coming up very soon, where you will get a lot of kind of benefits on the back end, like prints of my best photos. You will get behind the scenes content from videos, some possibly like tutorials if people are interested in that. And then also private community on Facebook, of people who are passionate about storytelling, people who are storytellers themselves, and also access to asking questions in some of these podcast interviews. So one of my ideas for the Patreon page is, based on your level, people will get advance notice of the podcast guests. You'll then be able to submit questions. So, you know, if we had the Patreon up and going right now, Joe would have had a list of some questions here today from Patreon patrons, and would have been able to ask some of those questions to me in this interview. And we'll continue trying that. So again, it's all part of the journey for me. It's all experiment. But if I'm really trying to build a community around this idea of developing mastery as storytellers. So I hope you'll come along for that ride with me. All right, that's it from me and Joe. Joe, you want to sign off real quick?
Signing off.
All right, thanks. And we'll see you all very soon.